When the very first Star Wars film blasted on movie screens 40 years ago this week, even director George Lucas had his doubts about the sci-fi film. But audiences thought otherwise, embracing the film and its sequels, and yes, even the oft-maligned prequels, with a lasting devotion. The Star Wars universe had recognizable, relatable archetypes, exploring the light and dark side of nature. Eric Wesselman and Scott Jordan are psychology professors at Illinois State University, whose research often explores the psychological depths of popular culture. Jordan says the appeal of Star Wars is in the psychology of belonging to something bigger than yourself and finding a story for yourself within a larger story. And while we watch in awe of Luke Skywalker's heroic journey, ultimately, we relate more to Han Solo and what he represents.
The great thing about the Han Solo character is that he is just your average Joe amidst in all this high-level religious political controversy. So he's the everyman with a gun, right?
Is he the more relatable than Luke, perhaps?
Oh, that's why 1, 2, and 3 had a hard time, because there were no space pirates. Right.
Okay.
You need Han Solo to tell every man's story in the midst of all that political religious turmoil. And having Han Solo there provides the everyman perspective, as well as the everyman comic relief.
Garbage. A really wonderful idea. What an incredible smell you've discovered.
Eric, what about Luke?
I think, one thing about Luke, or well, I suppose really any of these characters, but Luke in particular, who's the primary protagonist, at least in the first one, is we're all looking for our place in the world, in the universe. And especially when we're young, there are lots of forces around us that we can't control. And I suppose that doesn't change as we grow older. But Luke is really struggling to find who he is, what he wants, and I think a lot of us get that, and then is thrust into this conflict that you didn't necessarily expect, but he also gets to find out he has cool special powers.
I suggest you try it again, Luke. This time, let go your conscious self and act on instinct.
With the blast shield down, I can't even see. How am I supposed to fight?
Your eyes can deceive you. Don't trust them. You see? You can do it.
I did feel something. I could almost see the remote.
That's good. You've taken your first step into a larger world.
Right, and so for a lot of youth who are probably feeling this way, this idea that they can, have this something that makes them unique, even if it's in a fantasy land, is something that I think a lot of people resonate with.
So Luke's journey was the hero's journey. Han's journey was the everyman's journey.
Yeah, yeah.
Where does Darth Vader fit into all of this? And the dark side of the Force. Is the dark side of the Force representing the dark side of our personality? Is it the id?
I would say from a very basic Freudian perspective, yes. I mean, if the id is the savage driving force, our desires unchecked by society. I mean, throughout the series, a lot of what the Jedi talk about is trying to avoid extremes in terms of emotion, either positive or negative, right? But this idea of balance seems to come up a lot, and, being mindful of your emotions, things like that. So I'd say, if you look at Darth Vader's evolution throughout the 4, 5, and 6, then even 1, 2, and 3, he's being driven by the extremes in his life.
The ability to destroy a planet is insignificant next to the power of the Force.
Your sad devotion to that ancient religion has not helped you conjure up the stolen data tapes or given you clairvoyance enough to find the rebels' hidden fort.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
He's not a sociopath. Vader. Right. In other words, he's a kid who wasn't skilled enough to become the Shinto priest. He was constantly infuriated by his inability, and he always felt Obi-Wan was holding him back, and he just didn't have what it took to be graceful enough to become someone who had that much power and not be as violent as he wanted to be all the time. So I think he was just felt unforgivably ostracized by the very thing he wanted to be most, which was a Jedi Knight. And I think that's why he hunted him down. So that's not sociopathy, right? That's just a kid who wasn't good enough to be what he wanted to be and hated everybody because he didn't get there. So that's possible for all of us. Absolutely. He does care what other people think about him, and that's probably why he had a hard time.
His perspectives change for various reasons, but he seems to always be doing what he's doing for what he believes is right. You know, the path to hell paved with good intentions and all of that. Of course, mm-hmm. It's a longer process of a slippery slope. Well, actually, he even uses the phrase, from my perspective, the Jedi are evil.
We've touched on Freud a bit, and could we go a little Jungian, if you guys don't mind? Can we think of the Force as a representation of the collective unconscious?
Well, I don't know if I would say it's necessarily a collective unconscious, but Jung talked a lot about archetypes, right? And I mean, you mentioned the hero's journey earlier, so Joseph Campbell was, became friends with George Lucas. And George Lucas, when he was making his transition into film, studied a lot of social sciences, anthropology, and psychology in college, so it's possible that that may have been inspiring. There's somewhere I don't want to, you know, put any words in George Lucas's mouth.
Goodness, no.
But I think it's definitely a reasonable assumption. That's one reason why we resonate with these things so much, is they're tapping these cultural symbols.
Let's talk about what Star Wars created within us, that is the fandom, and the rise of geek culture. I think maybe we could look to Star Wars to being at least one of the tent poles to holding that up, and the rise of geekdom and fandom. Is this giving geeks who maybe previously were pretty isolated, giving them a safe space to be together, to go to, you know, Star Wars Con or Comic Con or whatever, as a place of safety and support, whereas before geek culture, they were ridiculed.
Well, it's just the rest of the world catching up.
Yeah, they were ahead of their time.
Well, and this seems to be supported by research on fandom generally, not just Star Wars, but there are sort of two main connections we can draw, right? There's one's connection to the material. In this case, it might be Star Wars, but it could be Star Trek. It could be Harry Potter. It could be your favorite sports team, right? There's the connection to the object, but then there's also the connection to those around it. And that's that idea of belonging with something greater than yourself. There's, you know, Scott talked about belonging in this narrative sense, but just simply knowing that someone else digs what you dig. I mean, that's a connection, and we're hardwired to connect to others. And if this is an easy way of doing that, I remember taking my son to the Children's Museum here when they had a Star Wars night, and you saw all, you know, dozens of children running around, never met each other before, swinging around their cardboard lightsabers, and they would stop, they would look at each other, and then they would start like lightsaber battling, right? There was no words that needed to occur. There was just this immediate connection, you know, and that's cool. That's very affirming.
Is it healthy?
It's necessary.
Why is it necessary?
You have two thoughts in your head right now. The one you're having, like, wow, this is cool, and the ones I'm putting in there. And you can tell them apart. If you can't, you're schizophrenic. So as we're sitting here thinking, we can keep track of the thoughts we're generating. But if we can't, we become schizophrenic, and we feel like the thoughts we're generating are coming from outside of us. My point is, then, you can think of our ability to track our thoughts as sort of a cognitive border. I would call that a story, right? It may not be one that I have conscious access to at every moment, but it's a pattern of expectations below awareness about what should be happening that emerges from where I've been and what I've done. So you're going to tell yourself stories anyway. So telling yourself stories about who you are and what you belong to. Eric and I wrote a paper a couple of years ago where we argue that part of what our stories involve is who we're going to let be close to us and who we're not going to let be close to us. And movies are all about who are you going to let be close to you and who are you not going to let be close to you. So it's absolutely essential to tell yourself a story. I'm not going to say essential. There are plenty of people that isolate themselves, but sophisticated adult life involves engagement. And therefore, you know, who do I hang around with? Who do I not hang around with? And then, like in a fandom phenomenon, or as you mentioned, the sports thing, how many times have you heard people tell stories about, yeah, man, we were at the pub watching the Cubs game and blah, 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 blah. So in other words, the actual engagement in the fandom provides fodder for future stories, not just about the event, but about yourself, where you've been and what you've done. So fandom, it for me is a subset of the bigger issue of just being around other people and having, who do you float with? Who do you let yourself be with and who do you avoid?
I would say it's healthy as long as you don't get hit too hard with a lightsaber.
Exactly. As long as your lightsaber is better than everybody else. See, when I was growing up and we watched Star Wars at the theater, then what we did was we went home and got brooms.
Oh, see, now I use tubes that you use for wrapping paper.
Tubes? No, no. You got to have some wrapped knuckles if you're going to be a Jedi, man. And we would choreograph fights. Oh, my God. And then we get in trouble because we'd wrap each other's knuckles.
That's Scott Jordan and Eric Wesselman, professors from the Illinois State University Department of Psychology. I'm Laura Kennedy.